We love supporting and promoting the creators of musical theater throughout the world, and we would love to have your support as well. Go to musicaltheaterradio.com and click on the Become a Patron button, because a supportive community is a strong community. Welcome back to another episode of Be Our Guest here on Musical Theater Radio. I am your host, as always, Jean-Paul Yovanoff. We are heading over to the west coast of the U.S. today, L.A., I believe, to talk to our next guest. And he's an actor. And more importantly, because I want to learn this, he's an expert at Clubhouse, I hear. So I need to learn more about this. And I bet there's many of you out there who have this problem as well. All right, it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the show Leroy Church. Leroy, how are you?
Hi. I'm amazing. Thank you for having me, Jean-Paul.
No problem.
It's amazing to be here with you and to talk about all the good stuff about Clubhouse.
Oh, awesome. Now, before we get to the stuff, I always get to like to know who I'm talking to. Because, you know, Listeners might not know you. I need to get to know you better. So I'd like to hear the 30-second bio of Leroy Church. Who is Leroy in 30 seconds?
Oh, in 30 seconds, who is Leroy? I am a human, a nice person, very silly. A little bit about me professionally. I graduated from the University of the Arts. I am a Cheetah Revere Award winner for King Kong and the Ensemble. I've been with The Lion King as on Broadway as a Vacation Swing, on the tour for 3 years as Ed, cover and ensemble. And I made my Broadway debut in King Kong. I was with Cirque du Soleil for about 3 years. That was my first job out of college. And some jobs in between, TV, film, all that good stuff. So I can go down the list, but that's a bit of the highlights. You might have seen me on Smash, and this year I was in Passing that starred Tessa Thomas and Ruth Negga that was premiering on, what is it? Sundance Film Festival. Okay. Yeah. January 2021. So that was amazing, dancing in that. But yeah, and then I discovered Clubhouse and became producer, director, a casting, PR manager, company manager.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah, and trended at number 2 on Twitter.
Wow, nice.
Yeah.
Now, I have to admit, you are the first human on this show because no one's ever said that before. So
listen,
first human on the show.
First human. I like to leave, you know, I've been trying to get myself out of the habit of like, I mean, of course you asked, but I try and get out of the habit of starting with a name drop. Like, who am I? And then with Broadway shutting down, you really had to discover who you are without these things, without these accomplishments, because as we saw, you know, today you're a Broadway star, tomorrow you're in Unemployment the Musical.
Yeah.
Which is not a good musical to be a part of, especially if you're filing in New York.
For sure. So again, I want to know a little bit more about you. When you were growing up, was musical theater something that you had from the beginning, or is that something you discovered a little bit later in life?
No, not at all. Musical theater was definitely a later in life situation. Everything for me kind of happens, like if I went through my life story, it's just more than a coincidence.
Yeah.
But it all seemed just like big coincidence. Like it's a coincidence that I went from one thing to the next. So I started off when I was in elementary school and the teacher would ask, what do you want to be when you grow up? I always said a lawyer. Well, yeah. Through the years, I was singing in the choir and doing everything artsy, dancing. I discovered dance at 13 at a local church called Mount Calvary AME. And I just knew I wanted to dance. Yeah. And then I started dancing more and professionally. Not professionally, but technically started to train when I was 17. And that led me to the Elvin Ailey Summer Intensive and to apply for the University of the Arts and to graduate in 2009. And that's where I took off into the career of dance. That's when I did Cirque du Soleil. And from there, I saw The Lion King in Las Vegas. And that was when I got bit by the musical theater bug. I auditioned for that show. Well, first, you know, the opening of The Lion King, Circle of Life, is one of the best openings. I mean, I can't think of a better opening in any show, not even the top shows. But it just moved me so much that I ended up seeing it 14 more times while I was there. We had this ticket swap thing from show to show, and I became friends with those people. And when somebody left the show, they actually asked me, would you like to join our show? And I auditioned on that very stage at Mandalay Bay and got the job, was offered it, and couldn't leave. Cirque du Soleil were like, we need you here. Actually, we're down. And a lot of people were getting injured in the show, and they were like, you can't leave right now. So the job passed me by. And then I auditioned like four more times and eventually got into the tour of The Lion King. And that is how I got bit by the musical theater bug. While there, I started singing. I realized I could be an understudy. They put me in as Ed. I was like, I am doing a principal role. So going from dancer to just learning about musical theater to now on stage performing as principal.
That's fantastic. And you said you went on tour, and off air we were talking, you came through Toronto for a couple of months, and I think I might have seen you.
Yeah, you probably did.
I think that was the only time Lion King was in Toronto, so it had to be.
Wow. See, more than a coincidence.
It's symmetry, and it all works out.
Exactly. Circle of life.
Well, they can't see me on the radio, but I'm making the face. What?
Right. He's making faces, you guys. He's making faces. Insert narration. Speaking of, that's how Dreamgirls went. Just like that. Someone will be making faces, and someone else will have to say, he is actually making faces right now. Because you can't see him.
So after Vegas, did you go to New York at that point, or was you been to New York?
After Vegas, I went to Philadelphia to join the Philadelphia Dance Company. And then after that, I moved on to the tour. And then the tour took me all over. And then I ended up, after tour, 3 years of tour, I went to New York. Okay. And that's where I joined King Kong, and then Lion King called me back. And I also did Once Upon a One More Time, the Britney Spears musical workshop. That was supposed to be coming to Broadway, but everything closed down. So New York was good to me. Things were rolling, and I was, everything was going well. Momentum was building. I booked a Gap commercial, a Miracle-Gro commercial. Everything was going well. And I was set to for a callback for a Romeo and Juliet project. My great friends were choreographing from King Kong. It was just going to be a great year. And then boom. COVID-19.
After you got Lion King and King Kong, did you figure your next show would also involve giant animals? Or was that a trend that you were setting?
I mean, my name is supposed to mean king. Leroy stands for Loi, the French, the king. And then it's like the Lion King, and now King Kong. And what's next? I mean, I got to be in King and I. That's my next show, obviously. I went from playing some animals in one show on Broadway to playing animal again. You know, it was very interesting. I'm like, can I just be a human? That's all I want to be, is a human.
I wish I'd got to see King Kong. It was one of the things I kind of regret seeing, because I'm going to be honest, no community theater is going to put that on. It's just not going to happen.
It's not possible.
When am I ever going to see this again? And I don't even
know. You will have to go to Japan. I think that's it's happening next. Or either Japan or China. It's definitely, King Kong in general in Asia is just a big phenomenon.
For sure.
So I think that they were supposed to, before everything happened, they were supposed to be there 2021 or 2022, something like that. That was the word on the street, but no official announcements.
How big was that ape? Like, I think it was
three,
like 60. How big?
It's 3 tons. Wow. He weighed 3 tons. I mean, the whole ceiling structure was rebuilt, like, to hold him on this, this big circle full of poles and wires. And it was just 10 people to operate. Well, 14 people, including the people who were electronically operating him. They had like joysticks up in the audience. They built the box so that they could see and operate him. And then there's actual cast members that maneuvered other parts of him so that it made him look more lively. And it was amazing. In back of him was a full wall of LED. So everything looked like virtual, like if he was moving through space. It was definitely something. It's not like the typical, pretend, suspend disbelief, yeah. Broadway. This was like, it was, he was running at you full speed. That's crazy. Yeah.
Did you have any events happen? Like, not as bad as Spider-Man where people got hurt or anything, but just little incidents where the King Kong did not want to behave that day.
Yeah. King Kong was a diva. On one of our biggest selling nights, we made Broadway history for one of our biggest selling nights. It was like New Year's before the New Year's Eve break. Mm-hmm. It was like New Year's Eve, I think. The show, we had the biggest audience that we had. And of course, that show, we get to second act and King Kong just had a bitch fit. And he just wanted to not work and they couldn't figure out why. They restarted him, tried different things. It was, and then we made a new record on Broadway for The Longest Hold. We held for about an hour and some change, yeah.
What do you think?
So he just stopped and we just wait backstage and shower, yeah. Get ready. I actually had a plane ticket for that night to leave because we were on break after that.
Of course.
And I made it by the skin of my teeth, but yeah, that was one of the moments.
Yeah.
That was like... King Kong's acting up.
Yeah, he's what can you do, right? It's technology. And like, just going on things like this, they act up. But imagine, like, to the scale of that, and the audience just sitting there going.
Yeah. And people, one time when he got stuck, we had Christiane Pitts, who was the Anne lead mm-hmm. in the show. She was in the air, stuck in the air. So some holds, she would be up there just waiting, hanging out. In a harness, stuck.
Live theater is the best. Just
yeah, yeah. But we didn't have anybody get hurt like
that's good.
Like Spider-Man. Most of our team actually was from Spider-Man.
Oh, wow.
A lot of our stage managers and creative and company managers were from Spider-Man. So they had the experience, mm-hmm. the know-how, they learned from the mistakes, which I thought... Well, you know, typically when you hear about a Spider-Man and everything that went on, well, you be like, let's stand clear of those people. Yeah. But they actually had the most experience. And I think that's why we were so safe, because it was tried and proven.
It makes sense. Yeah. It might as well be people who lived through it. And it couldn't, whatever happened probably couldn't be worse than
yeah.
what happened.
Yeah. And I would hope to keep it that way. I'm knocking on wood, narration insert.
So what were you doing just before the pandemic hit? I've heard so many stories of people are in, you know, just about to open, they're doing this, they're doing that. What were you doing when it hit?
Right when it started, I was, I had just finished shooting the movie. I was doing so many different things. It was all rolling out. Like it was yeah. like I was on this, when you're just in your light, like it was like jobs were just flying at me left yeah. and right. It was a good time. I had just done a Gap commercial. I had just done the Miracle-Gro commercial, and I was up to do the Romeo and Juliet. And so, and I was on call for yeah. the Lion King. Everything was going well. I was like, okay, life is good. And then I went to nothing. I went to absolutely nothing. And both of my roommates, one of my roommates was from Denmark. She left. Another roommate was from Japan. She left. They left the country. It was March 12th when they shut down Broadway. By the 15th, I had no roommates.
Wow.
Yeah. They were like, if you want, it's going to be no way. It was all this, you know, the hospitals are going to be full, and then without insurance, it's going to be harder. So they picked up, if you were not from the United States, yeah. most people picked up and left while they could.
Just
before that, yeah, so. Wow.
So.
Which led me to Clubhouse.
Exactly that. So Clubhouse, when did Clubhouse first start? Okay, let's be honest. I know nothing about Clubhouse. Let's start. There's probably a number of people, because I'm an Android user. So okay. I can't even get on Clubhouse.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. Android users. Oh.
Well, that's all the time we have for Leroy.
Right. You green bubble folks. yeah. Well, Clubhouse started, I believe, April of 2020. It started in Silicon Valley as just this thing that people get on so they can have meetings. Fast forward to me jumping on there in December. It was December 15th. After about 2 months of, I mean, after, no, not 2 months. I was already, December 15th, I jumped on the app. the first audition for Dreamgirls was January the 2nd. Wow. So in that 2 to 3 weeks, I decided that I wanted to do a musical.
So how does Clubhouse work? I honestly don't know exactly how it works on there.
Clubhouse is similar to a podcast, but it's interactive. So it would just be, the best way to imagine what Clubhouse is to turn our cameras off and continue talking with multiple people. So there's the same thing, you can bring people into the conversation. So you're on stage, one person can open a room on any topic. There's various rooms. We call it the hallway, and it's just a list. It's like a feed, like when your feed on Instagram would be pictures.
Okay.
On Clubhouse, your feed would be topics with names of people who are in that topic. Okay. You start to learn who you want to go to their topic, just like with Instagram, you learn who page you like to go to and look at their photos or whatever. You jump in the topic, there's an audience section, and it's just your picture. Mm-hmm. You could be just a listener, or you could raise your hand and join the conversation. They'll bring you on stage, and then it's the same mute and unmute as Zoom. And you just are, the only visual you have is your profile picture, and you have a bio. Yeah, so it's just like smart conversations. Some of them are funny. Some rooms are like clever. Like I've been in one room, it's called the Lullaby Club. And in that club, just people are there to go to sleep. Like some people like sleeping to Netflix or sleeping to music in the background. There are people on there whispering to each other. And they're talking like this. And they're even singing stories or singing songs and telling stories, you know, so you can sleep too. It's really cool. So you have cool rooms like that. And then you have, you know, entrepreneur rooms with nine-figure, you know, how to build a nine-figure business. And you're learning these tools. Or you can go in a room with Ava, you know, DuVernay and learn about filming. And it's just so many different conversations and areas to talk about. And it's like, you know, networking on either steroids because it happened so fast.
Yeah.
I was able to just in a matter of like 2 short months get 11,000 followers. Or it could be networking on Ritalin. It's very focused. It's like if you are interested in this category, you can go and just focus on that and build more in that area. So it's really good.
Wow. Okay. So Dreamgirls. What was the impetus and what made you think Clubhouse is a perfect place to do this?
Yeah, well, honestly, I'm always creative and having creative conversations. And I was thinking about doing something creative on the app because me and my friends were talking and singing in rooms. And then I was like, what if we did something on here I was thinking of? And then right as I started thinking this, you know, great minds think alike. I ran into a group of people who were doing The Lion King. And because I was in The Lion King, I was really interested. So I came to all of their things. I was doing interviews with them. And I thought, oh, wow, they're doing The Lion King on here just for fun. We could actually put on a professional musical. Like, you know, they were doing a version, an adaptation of the movie. So they basically did the whole movie, which got my wheels turning more. Like, this could actually be something. Like, this could be a show. Multiple Broadway shows could come and do shows here. And so... two friends approached me that were in rooms with me and they started saying, oh yeah, they threw out Dreamgirls. And so we tackled it right away. She was like, it was because of my background in Lion King and, you know, and King Kong. And in my bio, I said that I curate, elevate, and polish creative projects. And so I guess that grabbed the attention of her and she was like, I want you to be on. And when she did that, it was like all uphill from there. Our first audition was about, it was a closeout room. At first, the capacity on Clubhouse was, I think it was 5,000 people could be in a room or 6,000 people could be in a room. Now it's 8,000 people could be in a room at one time. But we were capped out in the room for 7.5 hours. We went on 3 days, trended number 2. For saying thank you, happy new year. I would cut people off short because it was so many people, 10,000 people plus audition. Everybody wanted to be in Dreamgirls. We had Amber Riley from Glee and she's on Effie. We had Shirley Ralph, who was the original Tony-nominated Dina in Dreamgirls, and Moesha's mother. Everyone knows her, Brandy's mama. And we had Shirley Murdoch, who is, you know, iconic singer. So it was amazing. It was amazing. Those people joined the stage, and then everybody started to come in the room and see that it was official. Like, this is a big deal. And it was just a lot of buzz after that. And so after that, we got four casts together, star-studded. I called some of my Broadway friends. Those connections definitely brought more attention from the Playbill and Broadway Worlds and all that kind of stuff to get it out. And it just kept on building on that momentum. Mm-hmm. I sent out like 72 emails to all of the different publishers to let them know what we were doing. And it was just a success. We got four different Effies. Marisha Wallace was an Effie. We had, and she is in Jingle Jingle, as the voice of Miss Thompson. We had Alex Newell, who is in Zoe's Playlist as an Effie, a gender nonconforming Effie, first one. And two others. One was Taquanya. She was from Clubhouse. It was her first time, doing something like this. And then the other one was Christina Ray, who was the top three finalists in season 15 of America's Got Talent. So we had a pretty heavy hitter cast.
Oh yeah.
And it was just amazing. The show was so good. We had so many good critiques about it, and I think that people will remember it for a long time, and especially because of the timing that it was in, where nothing else was going on, Broadway shut down, and it's the only way. That's why it was so magical too, because something like this could only happen at a time like this. When else would actors volunteer their time? I mean, the people who were in charge of the rights actually thought there was a big corporation funding this project because of the names that were attached to it and because of how professional everything was done. And I was like, no, it's just when you put people in charge who should be in charge, this is what happens, you know? Give me a chance. And I just want to bring it up because as a Black creative, you know, there are many opportunities where we get the chance to show what we could do. I mean, just recently there was this cry out to the community to We See You. And that was for representation. So it was good to do this show, Black History Month, last 2 days, to put a stamp on what could be done when you let Black creatives do Black work. I mean, it seems pretty simple, but it's hard to find out there, yeah. You know?
Sometimes, the pandemic's been terrible, but what we've been able to glean from it and come up with is, you're right, there's no other time in history that we would have had this opportunity to
do this.
And congratulations on seizing the moment and running and putting that on. So I have a question about the technical aspects, because we all know the latency issues on Zoom and doing stuff online. Does Clubhouse have those issues as well?
Yeah, and we rehearsed on Zoom and Clubhouse.
Okay,
they both have the same issues with latency, delay, all that good stuff. So there was a lot of limitations with Clubhouse that presented themselves, and we hit it head on like an experiment.
Yeah.
We would spend hours trying to figure out the perfect combination for audio. We tried, if two people couldn't sing at the same time, how can you do Dreamgirls, a harmony show? Like, it's based off the Dreamettes.
Yeah.
So you have to have harmonies. How can we perform this live? That's the question that comes up first. Then we realize, okay, well, this is a situation where only one person will be singing alive for each track of the show. Okay. So for every song, the rule is only one person could sing it. Mm-hmm. So everyone else would be recorded. So we had a wonderful musical director, two of them, Elle Morris is her name, and Ed McCray. And she Morris put all the tracks and reference tracks together, sent every single line out, sent them out to all of the cast members, forecast and their parts. They recorded and sent her the tracks back, and Ed would layer them on top of each other so that you would have sort of like a karaoke style a karaoke style record with real life, the people you're doing the show with, versus just the karaoke track off YouTube.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing that would have to happen. And then everyone would have to have audio equipment and be their own sound engineer. So I jokingly made a joke with Alex, because it was like, you want me to be Effie? You want me to cry, sing, and press play at the same time? I was like, actually, yes. Being a triple threat on Clubhouse means sing, act, and press play on the tier queue. I mean, it's just normal. I mean, and I thought that was pretty simple, because you could do it while sitting down drinking water. Where, you know, for example, a King Kong, we had Christiani flying in the sky, you know, had to be tucked in. Her life was in danger, you know? And she still had to sing on key and act and be present and clip her hook at the same time. All you have to do is press play. So that was what each person had to learn, how to be a sound engineer. I learned so much about sound from this project. I learned what a quarter inch cord is, what XLR is, what, I don't know, what's input, output, all of these things. Like I never knew so much about audio until doing this project. So it was a lot of learning, a lot of hours of experimentation, like with one of the other things, like when you talk about delay, there's a moment in the show where the girls in the beginning is very famous, fake your way to the top, and they go round and around, and then Jimmy Early goes fake your way to, and another girl goes round and around, and they pop in for stuff like that, moments like that. Or in Dreamgirls, there were two in the show, they would have to rehearse. We experiment so much that we figured out the way to make it land on time with the delay and latency is to have words that you jump in on versus listening for the downbeat.
Yeah.
So instead of waiting, fake your way to the top and then breath and then coming in round and round, when he said fake your, you'll start round and around and it would land on time in the audience. So we had it down to a science with that, you know, and that took... Only way you find that out is by experimenting and figuring out a way to do it. And that's how the best things come to life. Like, you know, when did you have a Lion King until you had Julie Taymor saying, let's put these things on your head and jump around and see if it can happen. And then changing them to realize, okay, those are too heavy. Yeah. 7 pounds might be a little too much. Is there something else we could put on their head besides wood? So we had our, you know, experimentation moments and we created something beautiful from it. But it's over $200 worth of equipment that each person would have to have, iRigs, you know, interfaces and all that kind of stuff. And so we crowdfunding to provide that for everybody in the cast.
Wow. All four casts.
Everybody in all four casts. Yes.
How long did that take you to like, it's hard enough to rehearse a single cast for a show. Now you have four casts and you had to work with everybody. Did the cast intermingle or was it specifically 1, 2, 3, and 4?
In the very beginning, we had a cast together, a group party, so to speak, on Zoom. So that was the mingling. And everybody, some people actually... double cast it, just maybe 2 or 3 people because of dropouts.
Okay.
And they were doing the same roles, so it was just easy to put them in another show. But overall, most of the cast were by themselves, like they were kept separate. Okay. We would rehearse on Saturdays and Sundays from 12 to 6, every Saturday and Sunday from January the 6th until February 27th, when the first show was. So just less than 2 months, you know, less than 2 months of just Saturday and Sundays. And we would have each cast in those blocks of time. One day we would do, like, you know, for example, it would be cast 1, 2, 3, and 4 on the schedule in one room. While they were doing their table reads, cast 2 would be doing vocals in another music room. So vocals would happen on, and music would happen on Clubhouse because that's how it would be played.
Yeah.
Lines and reading for interaction would happen on Zoom. So, and we just puzzle piece everything together that way. And we were very strict on the people. This is why I knew, and why it was so hard at the audition, because I knew the level that it would take in order to pull this off. And we don't just need good people or professionals. We need the highest of professionals, people who can come in, you could say, learn this song on the spot. And we did that to some people, so just to test their flexibility, their on-itness. and that's what I was looking for, people who could sing on key right away. So we didn't have to spend a lot of time fixing people into being a professional. They did their homework. They showed up. We just, you know, I mean, of course it wasn't, even if you have a million of the best professionals, you still have to rehearse, build the story together and stuff. But it wasn't as hard as you're, you know, when you get into a new show, you're learning a new show and people are finding themselves in the role. This is a show that's been around. You kind of know what it gives and you know how to show up for it. So it definitely helps to have these amazing professionals in it.
So what was that opening night, for lack of a better term, I guess?
Yeah, it was the night.
The first cast. So, how many
episodes? Nerves.
I do not know. Because it's not just going on stage. You're creating something completely new with new technology and everything. So what was that like?
It was crazy. I mean, I got some surprises too, because like I said, we picked these professionals, but even for them, they're outside of their comfort zones. Like, now you're a voice actor. Like, you know, it's when I could see you and little things that you do with your face, they read, but when you're just doing audio, they don't read as much. So that takes a different kind of training. So everybody's throwing themselves into this new space. And then with the audio equipment, we had moments where certain things weren't working because of internet, Wi-Fi, latency, the amount of people in the room, and people, you know, I can't say it enough. We had professionals. So they were working with us, but I can't say there weren't any tears. When people really put their heart and soul in something and it don't sound right, they're like, I'm singing my heart out. And it just sounds like trash on the other end to the audience, because the sound on stage is different than the sound in the audience. Just like a real theater. That's how it is on Clubhouse. So the first day, it was a lot of nerves. And then it was just a lot of relief. And also, like, I had gotten to the point before the show, after tech, I get to a point where I know I've done all I could do. I set up the artist for them as much as possible. So now whatever happens is up to chance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I was comfortable, but some people were still like, is it going to happen? Is it going to work? Is the whole thing going to fall apart? We don't know. Because the Wi-Fi could go wrong in the middle of the show. Your mom could call on the other line.
Yeah.
Like, people are on their phones. And I watched the show. It didn't happen in hours because I warned people. I mean, I'm one of those people who think of the fire before they happen.
Yeah.
So I was like, make sure you put your phone on do not disturb, and you go to notifications, you turn everything off. And it was just like, you know, make sure you're in a quiet space where people will not come in or outside noises will be able to get in, you know, just little things like that. Make sure your phone is charged.
Yeah, just
fully charged at the start of rehearsal or tech, you know, make sure, you know, those kind of things. Because I saw a show where somebody's in the middle of the song, somebody's parent came into the room and said, shut up! And the live, like, Clubhouse musical happening right now. And all you hear is like, when I think of shut up!
Like I said, live theater is the best.
It is amazing. But after it was over, I mean, you could just see everyone on Zoom, their faces lit up, and they saw what they had done. And the show trended the first time I said I trended, and Dreamgirls trended. This time, Effie trended, and the show trended #4 on Twitter. So to be trending and to have all of these impressions online from just something that, you know, a group of friends put together, it was kind of awesome. And then it got me, my gears turning. I'm like, okay, what am I going to do next? Yeah, what are you gonna do?
How many performances did you do?
We did 4 performances. Okay. We did them on the 27th and 28th. It was the last 2 days of Black History Month at 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So yeah, and every show had a bigger audience than Broadway Theater. It was about overall we had about over 8,000 people see our show, which I thought was awesome to put it up in by ourselves, not backed, and just, you know, that short time, just over a month and a half, and then you have a show with this many people, this many eyes on it. It was interviewed by CNN. Me, interviewed by CNN for the work on Clubhouse. I was like, wow, what is life right now?
Well, I just want to say congratulations. That's
thank you.
Fantastic that you were able to do that. You took, just took, you know, the terribleness of the pandemic, and you built this beautiful thing, and you helped so many people. You made people, not just in the industry, the performers happy. You made all the people, the listeners, and everything like that. And yeah, you deserve all the accolades that you received
for doing. Thank you. And I took that on, and everybody's excitement about Broadway, to create a club on Clubhouse, which is now one of the largest theater clubs on Broadway. And it's the biggest Broadway club. It's On Broadway is the name of it. And people can join, and we have conversations on everything in theater, all across the board. We have Broadway Tony nominated and Tony award winning producers come on to teach how to be a producer. What is producing 101? Because some people want to do it, and it's just like the secret society of like who's doing it. And you go up and you see all these old white men with gray hair accept the awards for every show, no matter who's in the show, no matter how diverse the cast is. The producers are usually looking pretty much the same.
Yep.
So I thought it was important to, like, this is a space for me to positively tackle some of the things that we want to happen, be the change you want to see. So we have conversations, we do audition tips one-on-one. I had Patrick Goodwin from Telsey Casting come in and give some tips to the people. So we have conversations, performances, Q&As, mentorship, and this is all in On Broadway Club. So we have right now over 15,000 members in just 3 months now it's been, and growing really fast. And we have some really exciting things. We are working on getting licensors for shows so that we can roll out 4 new shows at once and just have people subscribe to the whole package. And, you know, you get everything. You get to meet these stars, you get to see these shows. And I'm excited about rolling out. I'm calling it the world's first virtual Broadway theater.
That's
is the On Broadway Club. So yeah, On Clubhouse.
Congratulations again on that. That's fantastic. So you're in LA right now, right?
I'm in LA.
Yeah. Are you going back to New York, or are you staying?
I think I will. It's you know, I'm going with the flow.
Yeah.
As I got to Clubhouse, and as you know, you may have get the gist of my life. It's like here and there.
Yeah.
I came to LA because, of course, Broadway shut down. Nothing's happening, and TV and film is still going. So I'm like, you know, while still doing the Clubhouse work and getting together shows and trying to executive produce the next one, I'm still working on my own personal career and, you know, trying to get on the big screen, the life of an actor, you know. So I'm here in LA right now. There's some projects coming up that may bring me to New York. So I'm open.
Nice.
Yeah. But when you're doing it virtually, you know, you can't be anywhere.
Yeah, so. For sure. Yeah. That's the nice thing about Clubhouse, right? It doesn't matter where you are in the world, as long as you got internet and Apple.
And Apple. Well, actually, okay, so 2 things. They're in 154 countries right now. So yes, that's true. And the other thing is they just released that they're testing on some Android. So pretty soon Android users will join. And as we saw that spike in the numbers of user downloads, they went from 1 million to like 12 million in just over a month or so. That same spike will probably happen with Android users. So once I see Android users on, I'm like, now is the time to do a show and get those people involved as well. So it's been really good to keep grabbing new audiences. And I mean, what more would an artist want? Somebody to give the art to. That's what it's about, sharing. So,
well, Lyra, thank you so much for explaining Clubhouse finally to me. I've had other people mention
you like thanks for explaining. Now that you explained it, I still don't get it.
I'm still staying on my Android. But
right.
But yeah, thank you so much for coming on. But before we go, before we finish, I always ask 3 questions of my guests. There's no right or wrong answers, but we may judge you a little bit on some of the answers.
Okay.
But they're not too scary. So question number 1, What creator or team within musical theater has had a great influence on you? No, it could be a composer, a lyricist, director, stage manager, even. It could be somebody famous or not famous, like a previous teacher or mentor. Is there somebody in musical theater that's had a good influence on you?
Yes, a good influence on me. Ooh, so many. Wow. I really love how Lin-Manuel is just changing things and shifting the world. I want to be a shifter like that. So I guess he's one of the ones who, and I love his touch on having like that edge, you know, like bringing something new to theater that hasn't been seen before. Most of the time you see the same people, you see Casey Nikolai doing the same Casey Nikolai over and over again. Sorry, Casey Nikolai, God bless you. So happy you're booked and blessed. But we get sick of seeing the same thing over and over again, but from the same people. And so it's good to have fresh, new energy and especially representation from other, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would be like that, where, you know, the only difference is now someone's Black doing it, finally.
Correct answer. 1 point.
Yeah.
All right. Question number two. Where on Clubhouse, is there something that you really like to listen to that isn't the arts? Something that we should, you know, pay attention to that has nothing to do with the arts or theater that you recommend?
Yeah, one of the things I talked about was a Lullaby Club. I thought that was really cool. Another thing that they do is they have comedy clubs. And I'm really a big fan of the improv that they do. Like, it's a group of people get on stage and they come up with a prompt and then people just start talking and improvising. It's pretty cool. So I love fun rooms like that. And some of the rooms that I love most are just friend groups, like just a random conversation about something going on in the world. And like one of the rooms was called 222 because it was at 2:22 a.m. So it's a late night crowd. And basically we all come in the room and we just talk about the day and everything. And I've really kind of forged some friendships on Clubhouse. And so that's really fun and cool. So, yeah.
Nice. Because sometimes as much as we love theater and we love musical theater, sometimes you just want to talk about something else. Right.
Exactly. And that's the good thing about Clubhouse. You end up talking about something else for sure.
Awesome. Answer number two, correct. So 2 points.
2 points.
Final question. And it's going to be weird from somebody who uses Clubhouse. Food in the theater or cell phones in the theater? Which is worse?
Food in the theater or cell phones in the theater? Which one is worse? I would say cell phones.
Okay.
Food is to help you enjoy the show. Cell phones is helping you not enjoy the show. So I'm for the theater and the people who are performing and watching. So yeah, food is a good thing. You know, I never saw a huge problem with the food unless it's making too much rattling noises or it has a smell.
That's always a pain. All right. If you're on stage and all of a sudden you're whatever.
You're like, oh, I want pizza.
Yeah. So I do have a story that I'm not a fan of food because I was in Romeo and Juliet and I just died as Tybalt. And it was a high school show. And we were like 2 feet away from the audience. The dude was throwing like licorice nibs things at me as I was dead.
Oh no.
Yeah. And they were, hey, he moved. Okay. I got hit with a nib.
I got hit with I moved.
I know.
Duh.
I'm not a fan of food sometimes.
Well, food, if you're not throwing it at the stage, know.
I would have also accepted neither are good.
See, I wouldn't blame that one on food. I would blame that one on assholes.
True. They would have
thought. So food and cell phones, okay, assholes not.
Exactly. But you gotta have cell phones when you're doing Clubhouse, right? So
yeah, you do have to have cell phones when you're doing Clubhouse. Yeah. If you're in a Clubhouse show, then you have cell phones plus.
And you can have food and you can have whatever you want at that point. Right?
Yeah, you could be, you know, Zoom prepared, top half only. Actually, you could be even less. We can't see you at all. Exactly. So yeah, I mean, I've conducted some full rehearsals from the privacy of my bed.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm for the phone, not the food at home.
three correct answers, Leroy. Perfect. You got perfect score. Again, congratulations on creating that show, and we're all looking forward to whatever you come up with next on Clubhouse.
Thank you.
You probably
will come to On Broadway, and you'll find out there'll be a big announcement of all the shows that are coming.
Very cool. Well, when you do know, let me know. I will share it all through my social media and let it
out. Amazing. I definitely will.
Awesome. Again, thank you, Leroy, and have a great rest of the day. Tune in next week as we'll be speaking with another guest or guests about their life, love, and passion that is musical theater. I am your host, as always, Jean-Paul Yovanoff, and until next time, I'll see you when I see you.